Welcome, welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and we here at Growing Leaders exist to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Now, Tim, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Were there words that really probably weren't that bad, but that your parents, probably specifically your mom, just like wouldn't allow in the house?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. In fact, I grew up in a little bit of a straight-laced home. It was a lot of fun growing up, but mom, especially mom, had words that we couldn't say. I'm going, Mom, everybody else says this. We couldn't use the word shut up.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't say shut up. Is that same true for you?
Or? I think we were, well, I don't think my mom liked shut up, yeah. But she didn't come down hard
okay,
on that
yeah,
one.
We couldn't say shut up. It was be quiet.
Oh, yes.
Or I'm asking you to be quiet. She was very much grammar and everything else.
There's so many words there.
Yeah, I know. That's so much to say. Shut up. We couldn't say fart. That was one of the F words that we
yeah,
couldn't say.
You cannot say that.
Yeah. Did you have any?
Oh, yes. My mom, most vividly, I remember, we weren't allowed to say the word suck.
Yeah.
Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
And I actually remember to this day the moment. I was probably 17 or 18. And I remember my mom saying, that sucks. And every one of us kids turned around and were like, Mom!
You changed. You've gone liberal on us.
I know. Yeah, I cannot believe
right.
you.
Yeah.
And of course, we weren't allowed to say freaking either.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's too close. Something else.
Too close. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I think there are words that probably every one of us remember were off limits until a certain point. For some of us, you know, it was when we were 35, we finally got to say that word.
That's exactly right. Well, I think it was all our parents wanted us to speak in edifying language.
Yes.
Which I can appreciate. I can appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Especially because there's not a lot of edifying language out there in the world today. We're talking about F words. And it's not the F words people are maybe thinking about. But we're talking about F words that the next generation is using.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of language, words, phrases that this generation is making up for the first time. And I know we were talking about some of those as well.
Well, Andrew, you and I get in front of a lot of teachers and coaches and school administrators. And we're constantly hearing about terms from the next generation. And they're constantly evolving. So a number of years ago, we started hearing Netflix and chill. We started hearing lit. That's lit.
Yeah.
And you know, ESPN did a great piece, if you remember, about Division I coaches, and they were trying to interpret what this language was.
Oh, yes.
I'm not sure what that means, but I think it means I'm excited, you know, or whatever. So it's quite funny that we don't know. There is a generation gap that's gotten bigger since the baby boomers back in the 1960s.
I think it's, that language gap is one of the biggest pieces of evidence for how fast our world is changing today. Yeah. Because there's a lot of things you could say about, well, things changed back in the 80s as well, but not language quite like this, how quickly things are moving and changing.
Yeah.
So, but today we want to focus on a couple of acronyms, and they're acronyms that all start with an F that have been popping up lately. And I think what you recognize, which I think is very wise, is there's more to the story there.
Yeah.
So set us up on this.
Well, so Andrew, you know, it's not just the word. We'll talk about two or three words today, but it's the sentiment behind them.
Yes.
It's what's going on inside of them if they would use this word or this term.
Yeah.
So they are acronyms. They all spell something, and we'll get into that. But let's take a few minutes, and I'll just jump in.
Let's do it.
The first one is a term that if you are with kids, if you're with students, or even young adults, you've heard this word more than once. It's FOMO, F-O-M-O, which stands for?
Fear of missing out.
Yeah. So there is a fear of missing out. And by the way, I don't think it's relegated just to students. I think we adults can have FOMO. Where I think it started was when social media began to really reach a tipping point back in 2010, 2012. We started getting on our portable devices all the time, several hours a day, some of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be this fear that we were missing out as we were on our phones.
Yes.
The best vacation ever.
Yep.
The best friend, best selfie ever of my friends, or the best holiday, the best this or that. And of course, we're posting the best. We're not, nobody gets on there and says, I did laundry today.
You know,
they just don't.
Yeah.
So anyway, we start fearing that our life is miserable, that we are missing something great. And I think it leads us to quit. It leads us to want to change something. This is the proverbial, the grass is always greener on the other side.
Yes, yes.
So I get scared for our kids who constantly deal with FOMO because they're not living their best life, for sure.
And it happens, it even happens on top of that when kids are away from their electronic devices, they start to fear that there's something going on in the digital world that they're missing out on too. And so we see that as well.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in just a minute. But I think that what happens with social media is this great experience someone else is having is in our face. We can't get away from it unless we turn the phone off. But of course, that's a big if, you know, many of us just don't. We hear, Andrew, about kids sleeping with their phones, showering with their phones.
Yes.
They'll put it in a little plastic bag so they don't miss one text or one post, one Instagram. And again, I just think, wait a minute. Is this a signal? I don't want to say too much. I don't want to sound like a grandpa. But is this a signal that we're not experiencing what's in front of us because we're always living vicariously somewhere else?
Yeah, I feel like I'm seeing that with kids especially, and that feeling that I'm never living up. Now, there's it makes me think, I know we did a podcast on that, the eighth grade movie.
Yeah.
About, you know, and it shows this girl who spends all this time getting ready, and you're like, oh, she's getting ready to go out. Nope, she's not. She's getting ready to post some pictures of herself, right?
In her room.
Yeah,
yes,
so she's
that's right.
Like, it's 3 hours of shower and hair and makeup and all of this, and all of it is designed to create this fictitious...
An illusion.
Yeah, this fictitious reality that she only feels like she has to do because of the world that exists on her screen.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's sort of a response to it. And I think that's one of the most dangerous things is it gives me an unrealistic expectation of what I should be doing.
Yeah,
it's
true.
And that's sad. It's really sad.
So research shows us that this FOMO feeling leads to extreme dissatisfaction, minimally, but it has a detrimental effect on our physical and mental health, mood swings, loneliness, feelings of inferiority, reduced self-esteem. They're awesome. I'm not. Because we do know our real world.
Yep.
We know that selfie was doctored up and or whatever, Photoshopped. So, yeah, we've got to take action on this one. And the action I think we're going to need to do is to help them recognize that if they worry always about missing out, I mean, if this becomes a conversation, are they not actually experiencing what's in front of them right now that might be very valuable?
Yeah.
These moments with family or with friends that are right here. How many times have we joked about the fact that kids are all gathered around the sofa, Netflix is going, but they're all looking at their phones, they're not present in the room.
Yep.
So we need to make sure that we're helping students be present and have real conversations right here in front of you.
And I think that's just it, creating environments where real stuff happens.
Yeah.
I think far too many of our homes are filled with, it's either I'm on my phone or I'm watching TV with my family.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm doing both at the same time, like you mentioned. I think we need to be giving them alternative ways to spend their time. And it actually makes me think back to a comment that my little niece made that I mentioned on the podcast. When I asked her, do you wish you had a phone like your friends do? She said, I wish they didn't have it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just it. What if we sort of pushed our kids, pushed the students that we're leading to spend time with one another off or away from those devices, you know?
Yeah.
Go hiking and tell your children to bring their friends along or whatever. Creating real experiences, but real experiences in the context of those friends help them see that whatever's going on in the real world is so much better than pretending, you know, for a screen.
Absolutely. Yep. All right.
Let's do the next one.
All right. So this next one is one that we hear less often than FOMO, because FOMO is such a pervasive term today.
Yep.
But it's FOBO or FOLO. FOBO is fear of being offline. So most students, when they hear this term, they know what it means. Fear of being offline is just the opposite of FOMO. So FOMO is an anxiety I feel when I'm on my phone and I see what I'm missing. FOBO is, I don't know what I'm missing. I'm offline, but I have this fear of missing my Snapchat streak or whatever might be happening that's only an illusion in my mind, but I know something must be going on out there that I'm not getting in on. So there is a definite fear of being offline. Now, here's what's scary about this. That tells me we're anxious when we're on our phones. We're anxious when we're off our phones.
Yes. We can't win.
I know.
Yeah. It's a crazy reality. And I think there's two things going on here. It's the kids who feel like their whole life is on their phone.
That's
and so they have to be on it. But it's also the fear of if they miss out on one piece of this, that they're going to get behind.
Yeah.
You know, I've met seventh graders who tell me if I get grounded from my phone for one day, 24 hours, I will come back to 1,000 messages.
Yeah. And you know, some friends leave them. Didn't you find one girl that lost a friend because...
Yeah, she can't keep up anymore, yeah, you know? Yeah. And that's exactly right. It's and crazy. So, this one is really crazy when you think about, why are my kids so obsessed with their phone? That's a huge piece of it.
Yeah.
Is they're just trying to keep up.
So a quick story. A Division I athletic coach that we work with had heard us talk about this and said, I decided I would have some margins, some boundaries mm-hmm. for technology. So climbing on the bus to go to an away game, he had all of his athletes, student athletes, put their phones in a basket or a tub. And so they didn't have them on the bus ride. He said, I just wanted them to connect with each other and just spend time together as a team, not virtually. And he said, Tim, that bus ride was awkwardly silent because they didn't know how to converse, or they didn't have anything to say, or they had an expectation, I'm going to be on Instagram, and now I can't be. I don't know what to do. But that's just scary to me. I mean, it literally is. I know I'm old, but I'm thinking, if I'm with people that I play with, work with, study with,
yeah,
and I got nothing to say because they're actually in front of me,
yeah,
that just seems weird to me.
Yeah, you could argue that they should have more in common with those folks on the bus than maybe anybody else in their whole life.
One would think.
And even they can't figure out how to have a conversation.
So here's what's really cool. This same coach said, we got off, they didn't get their phones back because they wanted to go into a game, but back in, they had just spent a time playing a basketball game. Mm-hmm. And he said, I offered the phones to the young ladies. And he said, most of them didn't want the phone. And he said, we had the greatest time talking because they'd had an hour and a half to get ready to actually talk. Then they had played a game. They'd had a project together, a win.
And it bonded them.
It bonded them, and now they were ready to talk. So maybe we need to create those just in our application here. Maybe we need to create those moments where they have more hours with each other, and we force it. And it's stressful and awkward at first.
Yes.
But later on, it leads to really good bonding.
Yeah. And I think there's also, especially for younger kids, there's a lesson here about what's worth it and not worth it, right? Tons of these kids are clawing their way up the social hierarchy, trying to keep their Snapchat streaks alive and posting on Instagram and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think that what they really need in that case is a reality check that you climbing status on social media ultimately is not going to be worth it.
Yeah.
Because, I got into my 20s and realized all of that is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And if it in any way worsens my real life experience, mm-hmm. daily experience, it's not worth it to me anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I think we need to figure out how to help 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds understand that before they fall down that rabbit hole of trying to claw their way up this social food chain.
So a couple of quick bits of research, and we can go on to the third term.
Yes.
But first of all, there's an organization called CrowdDNA that studied the lives of 11,165 youngsters, ages 13 to 24. So this is the window that we work in.
Yes.
In 13 countries, 5 continents. And one of their takeaways was that a stunning 70% of these students, 70%, confess to having FOBO, fear of being offline.
Mm.
So there's an angst that comes when I'm not with my phone. So the data I think would be most helpful, we shared this before on this podcast, but it was months ago. Dr. Jean Twenge, that I admire and read after, she's a psychologist at San Diego State University. She says, we find that the two-hour point is the healthy point.
Mm.
In other words, if a student's on their phone 2 hours or less might be hard to imagine, but two hours or less a day, we don't seem to experience the anxiety, the stress, the depression, the negative symptoms. 2 hours or more, and we tend to start feeling proportionate amounts of anxiety and FOBO and everything else.
That's so great insight.
If you're listening as a teacher, coach, parent, you might want to be thinking about that two-hour mark and just say, we're going to have parameters.
Yeah. Can I throw another thing out
there? Yeah, please.
I found this video. It's like 3 minutes on YouTube, and it's called I Forgot My Phone. And I have used that video to start conversations with students about how much is too much spending time. And it basically is like, it really doesn't have a script or anything.
Yeah.
It just follows, you've probably seen it. It follows one girl around. She doesn't have her phone and everybody else around her does.
Yeah.
And you're following her throughout her day and all of her social situations, and you see what happens. And it's a really great way to start a conversation about, wouldn't it be healthier if we spent less time on our phones?
Yeah, yeah. So I would even say in that conversation with a teen, share the neuroscience behind how our brains need silence.
Yes.
And that in silent times when we have margin, we develop creativity, we develop empathy. So there's a lot of great stuff that happens in the very unpredictable moment of quiet silence, and there's no phone in front of me.
That's great.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about the last
F-word. Okay, the last one would probably be the one that that listeners might have least heard of. We had it introduced to us maybe a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's FOMU, F-O-M-U. So not FOMO, FOMU, and that is the fear of messing up.
Mm.
Now, my guess is if you work with students, you have seen at least cases or incidents of a student being afraid to fail.
Yes.
Being afraid of making a mistake.
Yes.
Being afraid of getting cut from the team or the cast for the school play or whatever. And so they just don't want to try anymore.
Yes.
Because I'm afraid of messing up.
Yeah. I was just with some teachers this week and they were talking about that. They really have identified that it's, you're probably heading here, but they've never really taken real risks in their life.
Yeah.
And because of that, when a risk is on the table, as in I'm going to try something here and I'm either going to succeed or fail based on my own merits, that's where they start to go, ooh, I don't know if I want to do this.
Yeah.
And it paralyzes them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the word that I've really heard a lot of people use. It's this concept of paralyzing.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do, so I do nothing.
Yeah. I think one thing I've noticed as I interact with parents that's happened that we didn't know was happening was this. We, many of us in middle-class America, push our kids for excellence, make good grades, make the team, make the cut, make the money, it's always making something. But we mistake excellence for perfection, or rather our kids might mistake excellence for perfection.
Because of the way we're talking about it.
Yes. So of course we want to be excellent. We want to excel at something that we're gifted to do and maybe we'll build a career off of. But there's a difference between perfection and excellence. We have a funny phrase in our office that we use. We're going to strive for perfection but settle for excellence.
Yeah.
It's just our tongue-in-cheek way of saying we realize we're probably never going to be perfect, but we want to excel. And that's the line I think, listeners, you need to make for those students. FOMU probably exists and you don't even realize it. There's an angst, once again, inside of them because they're afraid of what's going on. Now, let me add some research and you can volley back.
Please.
So I think the most unfortunate thing about FOMU is that it's a symptom of a fixed mindset.
Yes.
Carol Dweck, the Stanford psychologist, years ago started writing about mindsets in her book called Mindset. And she talks about a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, basically, we produce these as adults in our kids, in our students, when we either praise variables that are out of their control or we praise variables that are in their control.
Yes.
And the big difference is students, if we praise variables that are out of their control, students end up basically thinking, well, either I'm good at math or I'm not, and
yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
I'm either gorgeous or I'm not, and I'm not. It's a fixed thing. You can't grow, you can't develop, you can't get better. But Carol Dweck says our brain is a muscle, and it can grow just like your bicep can grow. Notice how mine has taken
off. Yeah, yours
has
taken really
off.
Taken
I got
off.
Guns. All right, but anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
That is a whole other
okay,
podcast.
Okay, anyway, I think it starts building students that say, if I can't win, I won't even try. And this is so sad because our nation, in America anyway, was built off of the land of opportunity. Go try it. Go do something. And there may not be a guarantee it's going to work. But that's what built the best men and women in the world is this entrepreneurship.
Yeah, the drive that says I could succeed. And even if I fail, it's just a step along
that's
the
right.
way.
Yeah.
And so I totally agree. We've got to get to from where we fear failure so much that we get paralyzed before we even try to seeing that failure is not the worst thing that can happen to me. The worst thing that could happen to me is I don't try at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think if we could get kids with that mindset, it would really help.
No doubt about it. So our takeaway here, our what can we do section, Andrew, I'd love for you to banter back on this one. But I wanted to start by saying, listeners, take the pressure off of these students and let them be human. Remember how many times you failed, flunked, or whatever growing up. I've often said in conferences, Andrew, that when I was tucking my children into bed when they were younger, they loved me talking about stories of my failures.
Yes.
It was almost morbid. I mean, that was sadistic. Jonathan loved, tell that failure story. I said, what?
Yeah.
But I think it was because he was growing up in a world of FOMU.
Yes.
And he thought, well, if my dad failed 1,000 times and he's doing okay now, maybe there's hope for me. I think that's going through their intuitive mind, their subconscious mind during this time.
Something I would add, and it's something that I learned from you, so I'm preaching to the choir here, but letting them fail. Yeah. I would add that too. Yeah. I think far too many kids have reached the middle of adolescence and have never really failed because mom or dad stepped in and rescued.
Yeah, that's right.
And let them fail in simple, small ways to show them things are going to be okay. If they forget their permission slip, they're not going on the getaway or the field trip or whatever.
That's right.
It is.
Yeah,
that's going to help them a lot understand. One, I have to be responsible for my life, but two, I didn't die because I didn't go on the field trip, you know? And if I learn that there with that small thing, it'll be easier for me later to realize not to get paralyzed on a bigger thing.
Huge piece of advice. I know it's simple, but I think we need to be reminded as caring adults, we've got to let them fail. And we've always learned lessons from our failure. Typically, I did.
Yeah.
So I think this is just part of the liberation of a new generation that we did get average grades once in a while. We did flop or didn't make the team once in a while.
It's totally normal.
And it's, in fact, I think I'm a better man because those happened to me as a boy.
So good. All right. I'm going to name our three F words one more time. Okay. So we had FOMO. Because
you just like saying these F words.
I do. I just like throwing them out. There was FOMO, which is fear of missing out. FOBO, which is fear of being offline, or FOLO, fear of living offline. Yeah. Some people say that. FOMU, fear of messing up. These are things you might hear from your students. And what we would say is that if you hear that, that's an opportunity to have a conversation to adjust that mindset.
And even if you don't hear these terms, know they probably are lurking beneath the surface.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure we lead appropriately.
Well said. Yeah. Well said. If you're looking for how to have conversations that really help adjust some of these, one resource that's out there for you is Habitudes. And I would point you towards Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these sort of missteps that we're seeing in kids' development and their attitudes, their mental processes, is coming from a lack of social and emotional skills. And so I would definitely point you towards that resource. You can find out more information about Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning on Growing Leaders' website, growingleaders.com. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, if you've got ideas for things we could talk about on the podcast, questions you have a comment or a response, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. If you could take a moment, write one or two sentences and actually rate our podcast, give us a few stars. That really helps get the word out about what we're doing. Five stars. Okay. We want five stars. I guess a few implies three.
That's right. You have not because you asked not.
Yeah, so. That's true. Yeah, five stars. And then, of course, follow us on social media. We love to connect with people there. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, we love connecting with you there. Follow Growing Leaders or @TimElmore. Tim, thanks so much for this conversation. I think it was helpful. I hope it helped you as you're listening, and we'll see you next time.